Ocean, Come Follow Yourself, Volume 2, Reflections on Jesus of Nazareth, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 1.
Bhagwan, then came to him the disciples of John, saying, Why do we and the Pharisees fast oft? But thy disciples fast not. And Jesus said unto them, Can the children of the bride chamber mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? But the days will come when the bridegroom shall be taken from them, and then they shall fast. No man putteth a piece of new cloth into an old garment, for that which is put in to fill it up taketh from the garment, and the rent is made worse. Neither do men put new wine into old bottles, else the bottles break, and the wine runneth out, and the bottles perish. But they put new wine into new bottles, and both are preserved.
Religion can be healthy, as healthy as a newborn babe, as healthy as the songs of the bird in the morning, as healthy as a newly opening lotus, or religion can be ill, deceased, dying, just like an old man shrinking, sad, moving into death. When religion is young, it has a fragrance, the fragrance of life. It has a song. It has a mystery around it. It has the quality of dance, joy, delight. It is a celebration. When religion is young, alive, fresh, religion is always a celebration. It is a feast. It is life enhancing, life affirmative. When religion is old, dying, or already dead, just a stinking corpse, then it is renunciation. Then it is not celebration. Then it is anti-life. Then it is life negative. Then it leaves the world. It leaves all that is alive. It starts being suicidal. It shrinks. Life expands, death is a shrinkage. When you are young, you are flowing in all directions. When you are old, you are frozen. You no more flow. You only grumble. You become hard. The flexibility is lost. When religion is young, alive, it is ordinary. It has nothing to fulfill the ego. It is very ordinary. In fact, in its very ordinariness, it is extraordinary. It is superb in being just ordinary. Life is enough when religion is young. No other God is needed. Then life is God. Life is divine. When the religion becomes old and ill, as everything becomes old and ill, whatsoever is born has to die. Even a religion is born one day, lives for a while, and then dies. But followers go on clinging with the dead body. Then that dead body kills those followers also. It becomes a source of illness, neurosis. It becomes an abnormality, a cancerous growth. When religion becomes ill or dead, it kills you. It is poisonous. This has to be understood from many directions. First, people are more willing to be in a dead religion than to be in an alive one. Because you have been taught to be afraid of life, of love, of happiness. Every child is brought up in the world with a conditioning, with a feeling that there is something wrong in being happy. A very vague feeling, but it is there and influences your whole life, that there is something wrong in being happy. So whenever you feel happy, you feel guilty, as if you have been committing some wrong, as if you have been sinning. Only sinners seem to be happy. Saints seem to be very sad. So whenever you are sad, everything is okay. You never feel guilty if you are sad. Have you observed it? But if you are very happy, suddenly you try to hide it. Nobody should know it. Why it has happened to human mind? Because every child is taught to be serious, somber, to be a long face. Every child is taught not to jump, not to run, not to shriek, not to be too much delighted, not to laugh loudly. Sit quietly. As if something is wrong in energy expressing itself. And whenever the child is happy, the family, the people around, they all start teaching him as if something has gone wrong. And when the child is not happy, unhappy, everybody sympathizes with him. When the child is ill, everybody takes care of him. When he is healthy, everybody goes on stopping, don't do this, don't do that. When the child is ill, lying on the bed, the father comes, the mother comes, the relative comes. They are all very careful about him. By and by, he starts learning that there is something basically wrong in energy, in happiness, in joy, in dancing, running around, shrieking with delight. There is something basically wrong. He gets the hint. And there is something basically good in being sad, ill. Whenever he is sad, he is appreciated, sympathized. Whenever he is healthy, everybody seems to be against him, the whole world against him. This creates a guilt, deep guilt in the child, and that guilt follows you your whole life. If you go to see a saint and you see him laughing loudly, you will be shocked. You will be shocked, a saint and laughing so loudly. A saint should be said, you have a particular idea about the saint. Yes, it is okay to laugh in the pub, to laugh in the hotel. The gamblers can do that. But to laugh in the church? No, it is not allowed. One has to become serious when one goes to the church. One has to become almost corpse-like. Because of this training, and the training has a vicious circle about it. You were trained by your parents were trained by their parents. Somewhere in the past, deep hidden in unknown history, something went wrong. Maybe one who is happy cannot be forced to work because happiness is a play. Only sad people can be forced to work. That's why when you work, you become sad. When you are on your duty, you become sad. A holiday has a different quality to it. You can laugh, you can enjoy. Life was difficult in the past. Man was in constant struggle with nature. To survive was the only aim. And everybody had to work hard. If you are happy, you would like to dance, not work. If you are happy, you would like to sing, play a flute, and not to go for hunting. If you are happy, who bothers about the duty and the office? If you are happy, you would like to rest and relax. That was dangerous. That's why happiness was condemned. Laziness was condemned. Rest was condemned. And it has been taught deep in your blood that work is the goal of life. A good man is always working. A bad man seems to be always on the holiday. Mullah Nasruddin has not worked for long, for years. One day he was sitting by my side. The day was very sunny. And he said, if I had been working somewhere, today I would have taken a holiday. And he is not working for many days, years. He is missing the work because he cannot take a holiday. From where to take the holiday? He remembers the work only when it comes to take a holiday. The whole human mind has been trained to be a worker. That's why duty has been praised. Playfulness condemned. Business praised. Gambler, gambling condemned. Because a gambler is playful. Businessman is serious. The businessman is respected. A gambler simply condemned. Is thought to be just below humanity. Religion is a totally different dimension. There is every possibility a gambler may enter in it, but a businessman is debarred. A drunkard may enter into religion. I'm not saying that you become drunkards. I'm just emphasizing the quality of playfulness. the quality that can enjoy and be and is not worried about results. But a very serious man is debarred by his own seriousness. Jesus created trouble for himself. He was a religious man, healthy, young, vibrant with life. Life was his God. In the Gospels, you come across many times. Many scenes depict him as sitting on the dining table, eating, drinking. How the Jews and the people, his people, could believe that he is religious? Fasting should be done, and he is always doing feast. He is always creating a feast around him. Wherever he moves, he creates happiness. What type of religious man is he? His own relatives thought that he is a little besides himself. His own relatives taught him that he is a little mad. And the society in which he lived thought that he is a glutton, a drunkard, can be a sinner but cannot be a saint. That's why he was crucified outside the town. Jews had it as a law. They used to crucify in two ways, either in town or outside the town. When a person belonged to the society and had done something wrong, then he was crucified in the town. But if somebody who has done wrong and at the same time was an outsider, to symbolize the fact that he doesn't belong to society, he is an outcast, he was crucified outside the town. Jesus was crucified outside the town. Not only that, but to emphasize the fact, two very dangerous criminals were crucified with him on either side. Two dangerous criminals. Just between these two, he was crucified. Just to emphasize the fact, to hit it hard in people's mind that he is just a criminal, a dangerous man, not at all respectable, an outcast, has to be crushed like a worm, not like a man. What he has committed, what sin he has committed, the sin of being happy. That's how I am condemned. People would have liked me if I was a sad man. They would have liked me if I was fasting and killing my body. They would have liked me if I was teaching to you some type of masochism, to be cruel to yourself. They would have liked me. They would have raised me like anything. They would have called me an avatar. But I teach you to be alive. I teach you to be happy. I give you only gospel, the gospel of joy and love. That is crime. That is creating a dangerous situation. That is corrupting people. Jesus committed the crime of being happy. That was his only crime, nothing else. Christians have been trying to change his face. They say he never laughed. Can you think a man always seen on dining tables, eating well, drinking, and not laughing? Impossible. But Christians have to create a respectable Christ, a Jesus who is not a criminal. They have painted his face. You can't find any picture of Jesus depicted by Christians, any statue of Jesus created by Christians, which is real or true. It is absolutely unreal. The man has been betrayed. Just the other night I was reading a poem. I liked it. I would like you to listen to it. It is a poem by Adrian Michel. The liberal Christ gives an interview. I would have walked on the water, but I was not fully insured. And the BMA, British Medical Association, sent a writ my way with the very first leper I cured. I would have preached a golden sermon, but I didn't like the look of the mount. And I would have fed 50,000, but the press was not there to count. And the businessman in the temple had a team of coppers on the door. And if I had spent a year in the desert, I would have lost my pension for sure. I would have turned the water into wine, but they were not giving licenses. And I would have died and been crucified. But like, you know how it is. I am going to shave off my beard and cut my hair, buy myself some bulletproof underwear. I am the liberal Christ, and I have got no blood to spare. Christians have made him totally different. He was not like that. He was a rebellious man, a revolutionary, extraordinary. And he lived it. He lived his rebellion. He was not a theoretician. He lived it. He died for it. But he loved life so much that he was ready to die for it. But he was not ready to be anti-life. That was his crime. Even with John the Baptist and his disciples, there was trouble. John the Baptist was an old traditional prophet. His disciples were ascetics, fasting, praying. They were anti-life. There was conflict between Jesus and the disciples of John the Baptist. These sutras are about that conflict. Then came to him the disciples of John the Baptist, saying, "Why do we and the Pharisees fast often, but thy disciples fast not?" Why fasting has become so important? Why brahmacharya has become, celibacy has become so important? There are two things on which life depends: food and sex. If you are anti-life, you will be against food and sex both, because they are the very base of life. Through food you live. Through sex, the coming generations will live. If you fast, you will die. If you become a celibate, you cut the passage for the future generations to come. If celibacy and fasting become absolute, life will disappear from earth. Those who are against life, they have raised fasting as a method, celibacy as a goal. The question is relevant. Why are we, the disciples of the Baptist, often fast, and the rabbis and the Pharisees do the same? But why your disciples fast not? People come to me also. They say, why don't you teach people to fast? I'm always surprised why people are so much concerned with food. If you study Gandhi's life, his whole life, he is concerned with food. Food and stomach. Eating and enema, these are the two basic problems continuously. Why he is so afraid of food? With food a fear arises. The fear is of sex. If you eat well, sex energy will be created. And if you don't know how this energy can move upwards in your being, it will start moving downwards. If you don't know how this energy should move like a fire, it will move like a water. So with the food, the fear of sex arises. Go and see, in India there are many saints, particularly Jains. They have a great number of saints continuously fasting. The fear is of sex, because if they eat well, energy is created. And if energy is there, then what you will do with it? You cannot laugh, you cannot dance, you cannot love. What you will do with that energy will become a heavy load on you. Better not to create it. Fasting is trying not to create energy. So you live on a starvation level. So minimum of energy is created, and that is used by your day-to-day work. You never have any to spare. Even for a good laughter, you will need energy. For dancing, you will need energy. So live at the minimum. Because if the energy is maximum, then joy will burst forth. Don't give water to a tree sufficiently. Don't give manure, food to the tree sufficiently. The tree may remain there, but flowers will not come. Because flowers come only when the tree has to spare. Flowers are a luxury. When the tree has enough, more than enough, and it wants to share, then flowers come, and then the fragrance is released. That is the tree enjoying energy. Too much of it, it would like to share with the world. But when you don't have enough, how can you share? The tree may live, but it will not be really green. It will be almost dying, always on the verge. People have learned the trick that if you fast, you can live a life of minimum. Then there is less danger. Anger will not be possible because anger needs energy. Love will not be possible. Love needs energy. Joy will not be possible. Joy needs energy. Life is a play of energy. Everything needs energy. So if you live on the minimum, you are just enough alive, and death is always by the hand. Remember, the kingdom of God is at the hand only when you live maximum, when you live optimum life, when you live at the peak, then the kingdom of God is at hand. Those who are living at the minimum are suicidal people, not courageous enough, otherwise they will commit suicide in a second. Cowards, committing suicide slowly, poisoning themselves very slowly. They will live and they will not live at all. John the Baptist and his disciples were ascetics. They lived at the minimum. Jesus was thought by his brother disciples, because he was also a disciple of John the Baptist, he was thought to be a traitor. He has betrayed the master, because he started moving in a totally different dimension. He became the source of an alive religion. He started celebrating that real Jesus is completely lost in the deserts of Christian theology. He is completely lost in the rubbish that Christian theology goes on producing in great quantity. The real gospel is completely lost and forgotten. The message of the man was to delight in, because only that can be the prayer and gratefulness to God. Life should be a feast and not a fast. Why we and the Pharisees fast often, but thy disciples fast not? And Jesus said unto them, can the children of the bride chamber mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? But the days will come when the bridegroom shall be taken from them, and then shall they fast. It is a very pregnant sutra. He is saying, when the bridegroom is there, can the children of the bride chamber mourn? That will look absolutely foolish, absurd, neurotic. When the bridegroom is in the house, there is no question of mourning and fasting and being sad. The children of the bride chamber will dance, feast, enjoy. The bridegroom is with them. But the days will come when the bridegroom shall be taken away from them, and then shall they fast. Those days have come. They have been on the earth those days now for long, almost 2,000 years. Churches are mourning. The bridegroom is no more there. Popes are sad. Bishops not able to laugh. Their faces almost dead. Life frozen and stuck. Flexibility gone. They simply go on repeating mechanically what Jesus has said. Jesus is saying that while the religion is alive, there is no question of fasting. It is the time to feast and be grateful and be thankful that the bridegroom is with you. It is the time to dance and sing and go mad in sheer delight. Yes, the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken away. Jesus will no more be there. Then you can mourn and fast at your ease. Jesus is saying that because I am here, how they can be sad? When I am here, why they should fast? This is the time to rejoice. Jesus says again and again, rejoice. He never says renounce. He says rejoice. The world is yours if you rejoice. The whole is yours if you are happy. The saying is true which says, laugh and the whole world laughs with you. Weep and you weep alone. In a deep laughter, suddenly trees and birds and animals and the sky and the earth join together with you. It is an invitation, an opening. When you cry, moan, you are closed. Then you are not available to the sea and the sands. And the sea and the sands are not available to you. You have become a monod, windowless, doorless, everything closed in. A sad man is closed, completely closed in himself. His being is not expanding. His being is not like a river flowing towards the sea. He is a dead tank. Goes nowhere. The movement and the process of life has stopped. Jesus said unto them, can the children of the bride chamber mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? While the religion is alive and young, don't miss the chance. Because long will be the days when the bridegroom will not be with you. Then you can mourn and fast and do whatsoever you like. But this is the trouble. When Jesus is there, people kill him. And when he is gone, they worship him. When Buddha is there, people throw stones at him. When he is gone, he is worshipped. This has been always so. Human stupidity is tremendous. And when Jesus is gone, a totally different type of religion is created on his death. Diametrically opposite to his being. Because those who create the religion when Jesus is gone are the sad people. People of the head, hung up in the head, they create, they gather together, they call conferences, they decide what Jesus was. They paint, repaint, the original face is completely lost. They take charge. When Jesus was there, these same people will never come close to him because he was not respectable enough. What misfortune that when Jesus is alive, he is not respectable enough for these pundits, Pharisees, rabbis to come and listen to him. They will not come. He is below them. They already know too much. But when this man is gone, They come immediately to fill the vacuum, to fill the place that Jesus has left, because now they can discuss about Jesus, what he meant and what he never meant. Now they can decide the whole character of Jesus. That character is going to be a caricature. It is going to be absolutely false, because these are the people who cannot understand him. The man of knowledge. The man of knowledge cannot understand Jesus. He can understand only scriptures, the dead word. Jesus is the word become flesh. It is alive, thriving, living. The man of knowledge is expert only in postmortem. He can dissect the dead body and then he creates something which is absolutely diametrically opposite to the real man who was there. These people create Christianity, Jainism, Buddhism. Buddha is not the originator of Buddhism, and Christ is not the originator of Christianity. Christianity is created by the same type of people who crucified Jesus. The same type. May not be exactly the same, but the same type. Those who crucified him were also the priests. And those who have created Christianity are also the priests. It makes no difference whether the priest is a Jew or a Christian. These are only labels. It makes no difference. The priest is always against the alive religious man. He is always for the dead, because the dead can be manipulated by him. The alive Jesus won't listen to the rabbi. With the alive Jesus, he is afraid. He will never cross his path. He will try to avoid him. When he is dead, then those rabbis will gather together. They will create a church on his corpse. That's what Jesus says. Can the children of the bride chamber mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? But the days will come when the bridegroom shall be taken away from them, and then shall they fast. When I will be dead, Jesus says. When the freshness of religion will be gone, Jesus says, then people will fast. They will mourn. But right now, fasting is irrelevant. So remember this. When a religion is feasting, it is alive. Join it. When a religion is fasting, escape from it as fast as you can. Because it is not only dead, it will make you dead if you allow yourself to be close to it. No man putteth a piece of new cloth unto an old garment. For that which is put in to fill it up taketh from the garment, and the rent is made worse. Jesus says, the traditional religion, the old religion, cannot celebrate. Celebration is new. Every moment new. It is never old. No man putteth a piece of new cloth unto an old garment. With the tradition, the new, fresh, young religion never fits. It will fit someday when the newness of it would have gone and it would have become a tradition itself, a dead past. Religion alive is a presence. It is in the present. A tradition is just a memory. Can you distinctly feel the difference? It has to be felt. You love a woman. The woman is there, you are there. Love is flowing between you two. It is a presence. Something indefinable surrounds you. Something which you cannot catch hold of. Something immaterial, something spiritual, something of the other world has descended around you. You live in a totally different type of world. That moment is no more a part of this world. You are transcended. Transferred to some unknown dimension. But then the woman is gone, the love is gone, years have passed, now it is just a memory. Sometimes you can ruminate about it, you can close your eyes and again see that moment of bliss. But now it is dusty. Much dust has gathered upon it. Now it is no more alive. You can feel, but that feeling is only feeling through the mind. It is not immediate. When the love was there, it was immediate. It was something that you could have touched. Something that was there surrounding you. It was more alive than your own body. And it was more vital than your own mind. But now it is just a memory. A flower alive in the morning, welcoming the sun, dancing in the breeze. And by the evening, the petals have withered, the fragrance gone. A memory of something past. You cannot live it, you can only think about it. And that thinking can create a clinging to the past. That's how tradition is born. Buddha lived 2,500 years before, Jesus 2,000 years before, Krishna maybe 5,000 years before. Something happened in the moment Jesus was here on the earth. Now it is only a memory. The flower is gone, the fragrance gone. Only the emptiness is left. And you go on worshipping that emptiness. You create temples around it, churches around it. You worship that emptiness. It is just a memory. But what type of foolishness has settled in human heart? When the flower is there, you avoid. And when only the emptiness is left, then you worship. You are afraid of real religion. That's why you become a Hindu, a Mohammedan, a Christian. This is the trick of the mind, a deception. This is the way how to avoid the religion. Because religion will transform you. Religion will destroy you as you are. And religion will give a new birth to you. Something unknown will come into existence through religion. And you are afraid of that, of dying, of being reborn. So you belong to old traditions. Jesus says, no man putteth a piece of new cloth unto an old garment. The traditions are old, like old garments. Celebration is always new. It is never old. It is here now. So religions which are dead go on fasting. They are ascetic. Religions which are new, they are celebrating. They have a type of spiritual hedonism around them. Have you read Kazantzakis, Zorba the Greek? Read it. Jesus must have some quality of Zorba the Greek. A tremendous capacity to enjoy life. An infinite trust in life. A deep attunement with the present. Kazantzakis' novel, Zorba the Greek, has some quality of Jesus in it. Of course, the Pope in the Vatican will be very much offended if he comes to know that I say Jesus has the quality of Zorba the Greek, but I say it. He has. I can't help. A spiritual hedonism. Allow me to coin the word spiritual hedonism. Because ordinarily you think of hedonism as very earthy. Eat, drink, be merry. That is earthy hedonism. In spiritual hedonism, that is there. And more also. Eat, drink, be merry is there, plus God. Eat, drink, be merry in the name of the Holy, in the name of your God, Father who is in heaven. Eat, drink, be merry, make them your prayer. Let your eating and drinking and marrying be a sort of ritual. A sort of prayer, a gesture of happiness that I am okay and I am happy that you have given birth to me. I am happy that I am and my whole thankfulness goes to you. A spiritual hedonism is always there when religion is alive. When the religion becomes dead, hedonism disappears. Completely, and the religion becomes antagonistic to everything that men can enjoy. Then religion goes on seeking ways and means how to be sad more and more sorrowful, how to kill all avenues of delight and joy. Then it becomes ascetic. Neither do men put new wine into old bottles, else the bottles break, and the wine runneth out, and the bottles perish, but they put new wine into new bottles, and both are preserved. Only a new religion, just born. Fresh, original, can celebrate. Then celebration fits with it. Can love, can trust, can enjoy. Neither do men put new wine into old bottles. Very enigmatic answer they had asked, why our disciples don't fast? And Jesus answers in a very indirect way, because there are things which can only be said in an indirect way. You cannot indicate them directly. I was staying with a friend He has a beautiful child, a young boy, just 8 or 9 years old. And he was playing outside in the garden. And I watched him. He was running after the butterflies, collecting flowers, rolling on the grass and enjoying the wetness of the grass and the dewdrops. And the gardener was cutting the haze. And the freshly cut haze was giving a beautiful fragrance to the whole garden. And the boy was jumping and dancing and running around in sheer delight. Then he came in. The mother asked, "Where you have been?" He said, "Out." "What you have been doing?" He says, "Nothing." Then I called him and I said, "That's not right. You have been doing too many things and you say nothing." He said, "That's why I say nothing. Because those things cannot be said. The fragrance..." Yes, I understood his point. The fragrance that was filling his nostrils, how can you say it? And when he was rolling on the grass and the touch of the grass and the dewdrops clinging to his body, and a subtle coldness and the freshness, how can you say it? And running after butterflies, what happens in the mind of a child when he runs after butterflies? How it can be said? And the sun and the showering of light, how can you say it? What happens into the heart? Yes, I understood his point. He avoided. He said, "Out." And when insisted what you were doing, he says, "Nothing." But he was doing so many things that there is no other way to say it. Only nothing can cover it. And only "out," a blanket word, covers many things. "Out." And the whole world is included. "Out." The sun, the trees, the butterflies, the grass, the dewdrops. And these are the outer things. And what was happening inside the child? The sheer delight. For no visible reason, just happiness. How to say it? When Jesus is asked, "Why your disciples fast not?" How to say it? He says, "Can the children of the bride chamber mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them?" He answers by another question. "But the days will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them, and then shall they fast. No man putteth a piece of new cloth unto an old garment, for that which is put in to fill it up taketh from the garment, and the rent is made worse. Neither do men put new wine into old bottles, else the bottles break, and the wine runneth out, and the bottles perish. But they put new wine into new bottles, and both are preserved." Very indirect, but gives you the right clue. There are things which cannot be said directly. They are so vital that you have to go around. They are like live wire. You cannot touch them directly. That will be dangerous. Hence, Jesus goes on talking in parables. Once, Adolf Hitler said, "I cannot see why men should not be as cruel as nature." Why men should not be as cruel as nature? And in a way, man has been as cruel as nature, or even more. Sometimes you are cruel with others, sometimes you are cruel with yourself. These are the ordinary categories the whole humanity can be divided. Rarely comes there a man who is neither cruel to others nor to himself. That is the man I call the man of God, the God-man. It is very easy to change from one extreme to another. Ordinarily, people are cruel to others, violent, aggressive. Then, that violence towards others, that cruelty towards others, has to be paid deeply. Because when you are violent to others, they will be violent to you. You cannot go on being aggressive to others. The violence will return back. It is dangerous, it is costly. Even an Adolf Hitler or a Napoleon has to pay for it. They die the death of sheer violence which is returning back, falling upon themselves. You spit in the sky and falls on you. You dig the ditch for the other and someday you fall into it yourself. So the cunning and calculating minds understood the fact that to be violent with others is very costly and dangerous. But they want to be violent and they want to be cruel. Cruelty is deep down in their bones, in their animality. So what to do? The best and the most diplomatic way is to be violent with yourself. Then there will be no revenge taken. So ordinary man is violent towards others, and your so-called saints are violent towards themselves. They are simply more calculating and cowards, escapists, but they are violent towards themselves. Do you know there was a sect in Christians? Still they are. Not so prominent now, but still they exist. Who used to flag themselves every day in the morning, beat their own bodies. Blood started flowing. That was their prayer. As if God is hungry after their blood. As if God is thirsty for their blood. What type of God they had in mind? Some murderer? Some murderous power? No. They were sacrificing themselves. They were trying to show to God that, look, we are not happy. We are very unhappy. Have mercy on us. That was their prayer. That we are so sad. Look, blood is flowing. And we are in such deep misery. Have mercy on us. And I tell you, God's mercy is available only to those who are happy. Jesus says one of the most enigmatic sentences, that if you have, more will be given to you. And if you don't have, Even that should be taken away from you. Nobody has said that way. Jesus is simply incomparable. That which you have, if you don't have anything, then even that should be taken away from you. And if you have really something, more will be given to you. Looks very anti-communistic. But it's tremendously true. Absolutely true. Because when you are happy, more happiness becomes available. When you are unhappy, more unhappiness becomes available. When you are happy, you get more. Doors open. God's mercy is on you. He loves those who dance, those who come singing, those who come with complaints, sad faces, blood flowing. They cannot be loved. They have not been able even to love themselves. How God can love them? They have missed. They could not love themselves. How can God love them? Remember this. If you cannot love yourself, nobody can love you. Forget about God. Even ordinary human beings will not love you. First, you should love yourself. Only then others love you. And you should love yourself so infinitely, so totally, that not a little bit of hatred about yourself towards yourself is left. Then only God's love and mercy becomes available. He loves those who love themselves tremendously. He is a lover of lovers. And His grace descends on you when you are dancing and not standing in a posture of a martyr. That is one of the ugliest posture one can take. Never try to become a martyr. But look, Jesus is something else. Christians have been martyrs, flagging themselves. In Russia there was a Christian community, a big community before the revolution, who used to cut their genital organs as a sacrifice to God. What type of sacrifice is this? What they are saying? They are saying, God, look, we cut our genital organs as a symbolic act that we are no more interested in life, love, happiness. We are no more interested in any ecstasy. And they will fast and they will pray. God loves life. He creates life every moment. God is not against life. He is the innermost core of life. Love life. You have the expression in English, live your lives out. I would like to change it a little. I would like to say, love your lives out. Don't just live your lives out. That is very poor. Love your lives out. Be a flame and burn from both the ends. Even for a single moment, if you can burn from both the ends and flow in love in all the directions, immediately you have entered into the divine. This I call spiritual hedonism. Jesus is a spiritual hedonist. always watch your attitudes, because there is every possibility the ascetic may be hidden within you. And always watch your attitudes, because from those attitudes, their awareness, clues will happen to you which open many doors. For example, if somebody is sad, in pain, suffering, sympathy is very easy. You are full of sympathy. But if somebody is happy, in great pleasure, what happens? You cannot sympathize with someone who is happy. You feel jealous. Maybe it is the same person who has got a lottery, and you feel very jealous. And then his wife dies, and he is robbed, and the lottery is gone, and you are so full of sympathy. What is happening? Why you are so sympathetic with sadness? You must have a certain hidden pleasure in it. You are violent. You are never sympathetic with somebody's happiness. And you are always sympathetic with anybody's unhappiness. You must have some hidden pleasure. When somebody is unhappy, you feel deep down very good that it has happened to him, not to me. And you have an upper hand. You can be sympathetic. It costs nothing. But can you dance with somebody who is happy? Can you be really happy in somebody's happiness? You have been many times sad in people's sadnesses. But can you be really happy when people are happy? Yes, you pretend, but you know. You smile and you say, good, God has been merciful to you. But deep down you are jealous. You can be in sympathy with happiness only if you yourself know how to be happy. You don't know. You are miserable, a miserable lot. So whenever somebody is in more misery than you, you feel a little happy, comparatively. He is in even darker depths. You feel better. At least you are a little more happy than that man. But whenever somebody is happy, you feel in depth. He is at the peak. You feel jealous. Jealousy will never go unless you become really happy. And your sympathy is false. Your sympathy is immoral, because it has a deep down pleasure in it, in somebody else's misery. And remember these things. A religious person is one who is so happy that he will never be able to feel jealous. He is so happy, he lacks nothing. I cannot see how I can be jealous of anybody. Impossible. I am so happy, more is not possible. More is not possible than how you can be jealous. People try not to be jealous. That's not possible. You be happy and you will be non-jealous. You be happy and you will be non-ambitious. You be happy and the ego will disappear. The ego can exist only in deep unhappiness and misery. It is a dweller in the hell. It abides only in hell. Go and watch your own life. When you say God, what do you mean? Do you know any other God than the green trees and the red flowers and the floating clouds in the sky and the sunlight and the moon in the night and the silent stars? Do you know any other God? And the heart within and the hearts without, do you know any other God? The whole is the God, the only God. But the religious people, the so-called religious, they have created a God against life. They say renounce life, only then you can attain to God. Jesus says, live life as a prayer. Love life as God's own. Love life. Move into life deeper and deeper, and at the deepest core, suddenly one day you will find God is. He is beating in every heart. And He is flowering in every flower. And He is hidden in every stone. But the religions have done a horrible thing, a horrible mess. They have put everything upside down. When Ho Chi Minh was alive, he used to ask every American visitor that, tell me, is the Statue of Liberty still standing in America? And don't be shy, he used to say, please tell me, because I have suspicions. Even if it is standing, it must be standing on its head. All the churches are standing on their heads. And all the so-called religions are just upside down. God is not important. If God is against life, God is just a concept, an abstraction, an empty world. It has no flesh in it. It has no blood in it. It has no warmth in it. It is just a cold, abstract concept. Pascal, one of the greatest thinkers of the West, had a dream once. In a dream, he received a message. He woke up. The dream was so deeply stirring. He got up immediately and he wrote on his notebook what message he has received. The message in the morning when he read was of tremendous import. He sewed it down in his coat for his whole life. In his coat it was sewed down. Many times, walking on the road or talking to somebody, he will just look, close his coat again. Very simple sentence it was. It was that I don't want the God of philosophers. I want the God of David, Abraham, Jacob. The God of life, not of philosophy. The God of the ordinary man, not the extraordinary egoists. Jacob, Abraham, David. The God of those who love life and live life is the real God. The God who is against life is a counterfeit. Any temple that is against life is a counterfeit. Beware of it. The temple that enshrines life itself as God is the only true temple. Jesus replied rightly. And if you can see life as God, then you are always in the bride chamber. Then the bridegroom is always and always and always there. If you can see life as God, then the bridegroom will never leave you. That God expressed himself through Jesus. That God expressed himself through Krishna. He danced through Krishna. He played on the flute through Krishna. That God sometimes penetrates and comes to the marketplace, but you don't recognize him because you have a counterfeit God. I have heard once it happened that a man took his grandmother to a great art exhibition. There she saw for the first time the real painting, authentic painting of Vincent van Gogh. She looked at the painting and laughed. The man asked, "Why you are laughing? Do you like this painting?" She said, "This is a copy. I have a calendar hanging on my wall almost for 20 years, and this is just a copy of that." That calendar was a copy of this painting. This is true, authentic painting. But she laughed. And he said, "Why these ordinary things are being shown here? This painting is hanging in my room for 20 years. If you are too much influenced by the counterfeit, you will miss the real. If your eyes become too filled with the counterfeit, when the real will encounter you, you may not be even able to recognize it. God is life and there is no other God. God is you, me and all, and there is no other God. Celebrate, rejoice that God is there in everything, every pebble and every leaf, full of God, every drop of water full of God. When you are thirsty, God is thirsty within you. And when you drink cold water, it is God flowing within your being. It is God who will quench your thirst. The thirst is God. The quenching is God. The water that quenches is God. All is God. What to renounce? For what to fast? Celebrate and dance. A real religion is celebration. A false religion is renunciation. Enough for today.